This is Off Planet Radio.
This is Off Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins, and from time to time, I have the privilege to speak to people who, in some way, shape, or form, are kind of my heroes. And while he may blush a bit and smile, nevertheless, my guest today is one of those people. He is, in some ways, kind of a spokesman in exile for the movement that's now gaining sufficient strength in the United States to take notice, the movement towards the usage of medical cannabis, and what he began to develop a very long time ago, and we'll go into the history of that. My guest today is Rick Simpson. His website is phoenixtears.ca, and he is the leading proponent spokesman for medical use of cannabis known as hemp oil. Rick, welcome to Off Planet Radio.
Good to be with you, Randy. I'm not really in exile. I came back to Europe by choice. I spent some time in Canada. The authorities didn't bother me. They withdrew all of those bogus charges that they were bringing against me. So I can free to go back to Canada anytime, but I don't know. What took place there over the years, it really left a bad taste in my mouth. So I've seen so much more freedom here in Europe. You know, the doors have really opened up here, especially in the Balkans. Because here, when I came here in 2011, well, they put me on national television. And that's something no other country would do. So once I did that, and then, you know, when I came, I've been back to Croatia several times, but, you know, when I come back now, like, they do interviews with, you know, TV, newspapers, radio, the whole shooting match. So we've covered a lot of ground here now, and we've got, from what they tell me, about half the cancer patients in Slovenia and here in Croatia are now using the oil. And when you're going to a Croatian court, they're if you're using it medicinally, they're letting the people go. So I'm really happy to see at least this much happen.
And we would hope as much for those of us who are supposedly so free here on the North American continent as well. The irony of all of this is that we're in a stone age here in the United States and in Canada in terms of recognizing the medicinal values of specifically cannabis, what you call hemp oil, and its applications towards not just curing, but the overall well-being. Because I've heard your different YouTubes and interviews over the years, and I know that you're a strong proponent for the use of hemp oil as an approach to curing cancer. But as well, you also have stated that this is something that is part of a maintenance program to our well-being.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Well, it's not just about treating cancer effectively. From what I've seen, you know, the strains, the different medicinal strains of cannabis, they do vary a great deal in medicinal values. But most of all, the heavy indica strains were very efficient in the treatment of cancer. They work very well. You know, and a heavy indica just gives you that sedated feeling. It makes you sleepy, and that's part of the healing process. But, you know, there's so many of these strains that have other wonderful healing qualities, like, you know, lowering ocular pressure for glaucoma patients or treating diabetics, you know, lowering their blood sugar. And it really, you know, I've been calling this, a medicine, you know, basically a cure-all now for quite a few years, and because that's what it is. I mean, you can use it if you have high-quality oil, you can use it in any medical situation. And I've seen this oil replace the use basically of all pharmaceuticals in a harmless, you know, manner that's non-addictive. So, I mean, this is the safest medicine on earth. You know, my God, you know, but here they've got us taking poisons and radiation and chemotherapy. The world has gone mad, brother.
The irony of it is, Rick, when you go back and you look at the history of hemp, you begin to realize that very early on in the 20th century, they started a cleanup operation on it. People who remember Harry Anslinger, which was the father figure of what's today the DEA, I remember in the 70s when I was a kid going to a theater and seeing Reefer Madness, which basically invoked the whole idea that you would go completely insane from smoking this. But we knew back in the 20s and the 30s, not just the medicinal values and the therapeutic aspects of hemp, but also at that one point in time, Henry Ford was using hemp to build car bodies. We had over 1,000 industrial applications for hemp that most people today are totally unaware of. The fact that we can make paper, apparel, all kinds of fibers from this in itself would be a strong enough reason. But in fact, Rick, what they did was they dried this up, made it illegal, and pursued a campaign of over 75 years of putting people into jail. There are people in the United States who are serving 35-year prison sentences for dealing an ounce of weed in this country.
Well, if that's not insanity, what could you call it? You know, I mean, what we've done, instead of doing things in a rational way and using cannabis properly, because right now, I mean, over 50,000 different things can be made from cannabis. You know, everything in our day-to-day lives, the plastics and all that, can be made in an earth-friendly way, you know, biodegradable, no harm done to the earth. But instead, what do we let them do? They go there and they drill the holes in the ground, they dig up the fossil fuels, they make the plastic. We've done more damage to this planet in the last 100 years than in all human history combined. Our earth has become toxic, for God's sakes. And, you know, and there was never any necessity for this. We never needed fossil fuels. We never needed nuclear energy.
No.
It was just a bunch of BS is what it was. It was shoved down our throats so these big industrialists and the bankers could make more money, because that's what they use. You know, they use up our precious resources in ways that can, you know, that gives them more power. You know, this really is utter insanity, because, you know, when you take something like cannabis. Now, say just using it as ethanol, making ethanol as a fuel. Now, in the new processes they have now, you can make 1,800 gallons of ethanol from one little acre of hemp. Now, an acre is only about 3,600 square meters or square yards. That's not a very big area. Now you've got 1,800 gallons of ethanol. Well, I mean, it's enough to run your car, heat your home, and have a few hundred gallons left over. We could all be energy independent, for God's sakes. And the beauty of it is, when you burn, if you're running your car or vehicles on ethanol, you see, when the plant is growing, it's taking in CO2 and it's giving off fresh air for us to breathe. But then when you take the plant at the end of the cycle and then you make it into a fuel, well, all it's doing is just letting the same old CO2 that it took in, it releases it back into the environment with no gain in CO2 levels. But where we're using all these fossil fuels, the CO2 levels are going right through the roof. You know, and nobody's doing a damn thing. And then when you look at Fukushima, I mean, that's a nightmare. You know, the Pacific is dying, for God's sakes. You know, what's going to happen when we have no fishery? You know, I think we have no choice right now. We have to get back to cannabis, because it answers basically all our problems. You know, it can save us. And practically everything we use in our day-to-day lives, everything from cars to clothing, you know... It can all be made from cannabis. So why aren't we doing it? What's holding us back?
Your own journey into this, Rick, when did it begin? How did you begin to uncover the curative aspects of hemp oil? And a little bit about your early forays into this, your successes, your failures, and how you got to the place where the name Rick Simpson is synonymous now, frankly, with hemp oil and the cures to cancer specifically?
Well, Randy, I mean, I'm just an ordinary man. There's nothing special about me. You know,
About you, too, by the way.
Thank you. But, I mean, I worked in the hospital system for, 32 of the working years that the years I spent working, about 25 of those years were spent working in a hospital. And I always had great respect for medicine. You know, but in 1972, my cousin died a horrible death at 25 from cancer. But cancer at that time was very rare.
Yes, it was.
And then about 3 years later, I was leaving work because I was working at the hospital. And when I was pulling out the driveway, this thing came on the radio, this report about THC, the active ingredient in marijuana, has been found to kill cancer cells. But the announcer was laughing like an idiot, you know, because every time the word marijuana is used, somebody's got to make a joke about it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I heard the report, but I thought, you know, this is just somebody's kind of like a sick joke or something. And I didn't hear nothing more, you know, about THC or anything killing cancer. So this is, you know, years go by. And then in 1997, I was badly injured with a head injury. I have post-concussion syndrome. Matter of fact, my head still rings from it. but it's at least with the oil, I can control it, and you know, I can live like a decent life. But after I was injured, they started giving me all these chemicals and pills, and it just made me worse and worse. And then in late 1998, I watched an episode of a show called The Nature of Things with Dr. David Suzuki. And he was talking about, you know, here's all these different people, showed them smoking pot, you know, for these different medical conditions. And it was working miracles. So I had smoked pot before, but I never thought of it like a medicine. So I went out and I got some pot, and sure enough, it worked better than anything the doctors were giving me. But then when I went to try to get, you know, like a prescription, because in Canada we had the medical marijuana access program. And so I went to the doctors and I told them, I said, the cannabis is actually giving, see, I couldn't sleep because of all this noise in my head. The cannabis was giving me more rest than any of the pills they were giving me. But they all said, it's, you know, it's bad for the lungs, it's still under study and all this other nonsense. Well, then by 1999, I was getting worse and worse. And then I thought, you know, I was even getting very suicidal. And anyway, I avoided the suicide, but I went to my doctor's office one day, and I, you know, because I was desperate. I needed something that would help me sleep. And so I told him, I said, well, you know, what would you think if I was to take that plant and make the essential oil from it and ingest it instead of smoking, you know, the bud material? Mm-hmm. And the doctor got a very, very funny look on his face. But he looked at me and he said, it would be a more medicinal way to use it. But he still wouldn't give me a prescription. So at that time, I was desperate. So I went out and I made some oil. And I'm ashamed to say it was almost 3 years later before I ever really worked up enough nerve to use it properly. But in 2001, the medical system, they called me in. They said, there's nothing more we can do for you. We've given you all the pills we have. And by that time, my brain was so badly fried, I could hardly remember my own damn name. You know, it was disgusting. But I remember I did ask for a prescription again for cannabis. They wouldn't give it to me. But at that point, I had no choice. So I went home. I started ingesting the cannabis oil. And, you know, I just did small doses in the beginning. And it just started working miracles. You know, it controlled my blood pressure. I started losing weight. It was detoxifying my body. I didn't understand it at the time. Yeah. And, you know, it was controlling, like I said, it controlled my blood pressure and everything. And it made it so I could sleep. I could go to bed and sleep for 8 or 10 hours, you know, and that's what I needed most.
Yes, yes.
So it did everything, just one miracle after another for me. Like my arthritis disappeared. My eyesight got better. It was just one thing after another. It was like unbelievable. But then 2002, late 2002, I'd had these three areas on my body, like one by my eye, close on the side of my nose, and one on my cheek. And I had one on my chest. And these areas, I'd had them since the 90s, and they wouldn't heal. So I always suspected it was skin cancer. So I went down to my doctor, and he looked at the area here by my eye, and he said, you know, it does look like cancer, but I won't know until I get the pathology report back after the operation.
Right.
So they sent me in to have this done, and then they were going to take me in to do the other two at a later date. So I went in, and I had the operation. It really wasn't a very pleasant experience. But about a week later, I was looking at it. I had this magnified thing. I was looking at the operation where they had performed it. And, of course, it was infected. That's often what you get with hospitals.
Absolutely. And, it's been my experience recently. Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
But when I was looking at it, it was just all of a sudden that study I'd heard back in the 70s. It popped back into my head, you know, THC, the active ingredient, in cannabis. And I thought, well, this oil that I'm ingesting is full of THC, for God's sakes. You know, and if THC kills cancer, then why do I have these skin cancers? And I didn't understand it at the time, you know, but I mean, our skin is the biggest organ on our body. And you can actually cure skin cancer by taking oil, but you have to take a lot of oil to do that. But I was kind of doubting, well, I almost didn't put the oil on, I'm ashamed to say, but I just thought, you know, what the heck, I'll give it a try. So I went down to the bathroom, put the oil on this one, and put it on one of my chest, put bandages on them, left them for 4 days. There was no feeling whatsoever of anything taking place, other than the fact that when you have a basal cell carcinoma, it feels like in the affected area, like it has splinters in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
mm-hmm.
usually some puffiness and bleeding. But as soon as I put that oil on, there was no more splinter feeling. But 4 days later, I get down, take the bandages off, and I'm just shocked. I mean, it was just all healed, nothing but pink skin. So I started telling people I knew, you know, because I knew that all three of them were basically the same. So I started telling people, and of course, everybody laughed at me. You know, yeah, right, Rick, marijuana cures cancer. You're insane. So after about 6 weeks of that kind of abuse, I was starting to agree with them. You know, maybe I was insane because I was my own first, patient. But about 7 weeks after they had performed the operation by my eye, the cancer came roaring right back. And I watched it develop. I felt the splinters in the face again, the same feeling as before. So I put the oil on, and I put a bandage on. 4 days, removed it. That's 11 and a half years ago. I've never, ever retreated them, never had to. And then I went down to my doctor's office. I asked for the copy of the pathology report, and it stated that I did have basal cell carcinoma. You know, and when I tried to talk to the receptionist, who happened to be the doctor's wife, she literally went ballistic. You know, she asked me, she said, because I told her, I said, I'd like to come back in the evening and talk to the doctor about something I've been working on. Well, what's this about? And I said, well, that cancer that they had removed, I said, it came right back. So I cured it and the other two using hemp oil. Mm-hmm. And the minute I said it, she just went rigid. She was actually yelling at me. You know, right in the waiting room, there's five or six other patients. And this woman was literally yelling at me. You know, the doctor will not go there. The doctor will not provide this. And I think, like, what the hell's wrong with these people? You know, so I get in the truck and I'm on the way home. And I got thinking about this. I said, you know, like, if I was a doctor and one of my patients came in and told me they had healed their cancer with something natural, I'd want to know about it. So that got the wheels spinning then, that I got thinking, you know, what's going on here? And then when I took it to all the political parties, the Cancer Society, the United Nations, you know, we went to them all, the TV shows. Nobody would touch this with a 10-foot pole. You know, so it told me the whole damn system is corrupted from one end to the other. And they don't want us to have this medicine, because the truth is anybody can grow it right in their own backyard. And the medicine is so simple, anybody can make it. It certainly takes the mystery out of medicine.
You look at the numbers on the medical industry today, especially in the area of cancer. Cancer worldwide, but certainly from my experience here in the United States, is an industry unto itself. You have multi-million-dollar oncology practice that do nothing but burn and radiate to eliminate cancer, thereby killing a lot of the healthy cells that would have aided in fighting the cancers in a more natural way. You look at the Rockefeller cabal that basically extinguished the use of hemp from the 1920s forward. How ironic is that, when the Rockefellers themselves have a legacy of being medicine men back in the 1800s? But it looks to me like, again, you follow the money, you follow the politics, and what you find out is that this was all, and this is conspiracy theory, okay, I'll go there, but damn it, they dried this up specifically to bring in big pharma and the big chemical industry solutions that are now, frankly, killing tens of millions of people across the planet.
That's exactly right, brother. Well, it was in the early 1900s, in 1906, 1907, the John D. Rockefeller got together with his rich buddies, and they're the ones that own the chemical factories and everything, you know. So they get together and they say, well, we promote the use of allopathic medicine, medicine from chemicals and poisons, you know, and then we just take the old empirical medicine, we shove that right out the back door. And that's exactly what they did, you know, with the help of, William Randolph Hearst and Harry Anslinger, yes, and all the rest, yes, of them. You know, nothing, I mean, you talk about mass murderers, my God, I mean, these guys make Hitler look like a choir boy. You know, this crime, by outlawing especially the medicinal use of this plant, you know, over the last few decades, they have killed, I have to say, billions of people. They've made billions of people suffer needlessly all over this earth, just over greed. You know, I mean, what the hell is wrong with the human race? Isn't it time we grew up?
It was interesting you talking about the reaction to the doctor's wife when you mentioned cannabis. This is mind control. It is mass-scale mind control. They were so successful for so long in inculcating into the mainstream the idea that this is a drug, when it is in fact part of nature. It's even in the Bible about the herbs that are used to cure diseases and healing. It's in Genesis and it's in Revelation, and yet we go right by it and we use all of these horrible cocktails that they're giving us now. It is madness. Tell me a little bit.
Well, I have to agree with you.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Tell me a little bit about how you became known in your cures for cancer in Canada. In other words, you began actually creating hemp oil and distributing it to help other people. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, back in 2003, I started a campaign to, when I seen that, nobody was doing anything about this, I started passing the medicine out to other people, just like people with skin conditions in the beginning, like psoriasis or warts or moles. And it just does amazing things, an unhealthy wart or mole in no time just falls off. But I was having all these wonderful results, so I started contacting all the political parties in Canada. I contacted two federal ministers of health. I went to all the right people, thinking that somebody would do something here. But nobody, in most cases, they didn't even reply to me, mm-hmm. So, and basically in desperation, I went to the newspapers in 2004 about it. They wrote big full page articles about it, detailing all my activities a year before I was ever charged. I mean, I made no secrets about what I was doing. I told the police openly what I was doing. I gave them videotape. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, I was looking at this thinking like, this is a wonderful thing that, the public needs it. And they were, still trying to pretend that it was some kind of a crime. But, I mean, I agree with what you said. As far as I'm concerned, cannabis is not a drug. It's a medicine that can be used recreationally with good effect, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
Even the Schaefer Commission, they told Nixon, they said, they didn't even consider this to be a narcotic. When we think of the word drug, we think of these, heavy, dangerous, addictive, and for the most part, pharmaceuticals. Because over 80% of the people that are dying from drug overdoses on the street, that's what they're dying from.
Well, that's what you've got. You've got crack, methamphetamine, heroin. almost all of the street cocaine today is not medicinal grade or pure. It's cut with something. It's compounded. And that's been true in the United States since the early 1970s as well.
Yes. Yeah, it's the same thing with the hashish. I mean, one time when you got hashish, it used to be good, but today it's been stepped on. I mean, half the time, I think you're buying dog poo.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sad to say. I fondly remember when I was a kid, Thai stick, which was wonderful stuff that was being brought in from the East by soldiers coming back from ports of call in the Middle East during the Vietnam War.
Yeah. Sure.
We've been made to feel like we're criminals for something that's part of nature. I mean, we have these cannabinoids in our body that are triggered by ingestion that enable us to begin to access not only our body's health, but states of consciousness that are a little bit more balanced.
Yes. Well, I love one of the experts in this field, Dr. Robert Bellamy. The way he describes it, because he talks about mother's milk, and mother's milk is full of natural cannabinoids.
Right.
It's what's good for the baby. So I love the way he describes it. He said, if you're going to arrest people for, cannabinoid distribution, then you'd have to arrest the mothers as the distributors and the babies as the users.
But they've done that. Look what they did in the 1950s. They marketed formula to new mothers and said, oh, you don't need to breastfeed your children anymore. We had this, and we still have it. But today, I think some mothers have woken up at least enough to start again nursing their babies. But everything that's natural and pure and God-given has somehow been demonized and criminalized, and in its place has been some formula made by chemical companies for profit.
Well, today, just look at the rate of autism. From what I understand, mm-hmm. autism has gone up something like 10,000 times since 1975.
Yes.
Now, Bill Gates is, from what I understand now, he's basically behind all of these, heavier shots and your vaccinations and all that, because good old Bill, he cares about us.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched the documentary, him talking about it, and 2 minutes later, he's talking about depopulating the planet. Mm-hmm. You know, so as far as I'm concerned, Mr. Gates can take his vaccine and shove him where the sun don't shine. You know, and when I look at today, when I look at these programs they have in these schools, I mean, how dare they take young children, and not just in schools, but even from the time they're infants, and just start filling them full of this trash. I mean, if you have a child and you want to protect it, give the child hemp oil. That'll protect the child. What they're doing, I mean, it can do irreparable damage to that child. And I mean, when you look at, when you start saying the rate of autism going up 10,000 times, do people actually realize what that means? I mean, you have an autistic child. That's it. You got a life sentence. You're going to be taking care of that child for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know, you and your husband, you're condemned. And you don't have to be condemned because we've had wonderful results using the oil for autism, even schizophrenia. This oil can work amazing results for, like I said, that's the reason I call it a cure-all, because it is.
The politics of this is, I guess, what we're constantly dealing with, of how we got to a place where we had a prohibition that's lasted nearly a century in one way or another on this substance, and how people have been deprived of even the knowledge of it. I mean, somebody like you who's out there for so long in the forefront expounding upon this is basically, as you pointed out, in Europe, you get on mainstream TV. In America, well, you're going to be on YouTube, but unfortunately, you're not going to be in mainstream news. And, you know, I always think about that old Bible saying, "My people perish for lack of wisdom." It appears as though wisdom has been expunged from this planet like some kind of germ warfare in terms of how they have continued to dumb us down and take us away from our original nature, which is tied to the earth.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, what they're doing to children, everybody today. I mean, this is imaginary disease, you know, attention deficit disorder.
Yeah.
What kind of nonsense is that? You know, and then they start filling the kids full of Ritalin, and then later maybe it's Prozac and Valium and all these other things that do strange things to their minds. You know, but that's okay because that's all done by a medical doctor. You know, I mean, I just look at when you look at the safety factor with any medicine, I mean, even worldwide, things we look at as being safe like aspirin. Aspirin kills thousands of people worldwide every year.
Yeah.
So even aspirin isn't safe. But show me somebody that died from cannabis. Not one recorded death in the history's use, you know, in the medicinal use of this plant, and it's been used throughout history. And it's man's oldest known and safest medication. There's 5,000 years of history, written history here about it. Christ himself used this plant. It wasn't the power of God that he used to heal the people. It was the power of cannabis. Because if you look at the holy anointing oil, you know, olive oil, cannablossom, cannabis resins, the same resins.
Wow, I never heard that before. That's,
you know, so
that's
this
that's
has all
awesome.
Been hidden.
That's awesome.
Oh, it's true.
You went through a trial, and it was obviously a kangaroo court designed to basically hoik up charges on you and criminalize you and what you were doing. Tell me a little bit about the trial, the outcome, and what proceeded out of that.
Well, I mean, I did. I went through what they call a charter challenge in Canada first. In Canada, you have what's known as the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and under the Charter of Rights, it says, as a Canadian, I have the right to life. You know, but I found out that that only applies if you're willing to take their pills. If you want to take something natural, you don't have the right to life. Because the charter challenge was really, I had 48 sworn affidavits. The judge said that they were all anecdotal. He said that I didn't present any life-threatening conditions. So according to him, you know, skin cancer is not life-threatening. That's news to me.
Yeah.
I've seen quite a few people die from it. And, you know, in the condition that I have, the post-concussion syndrome, most people wind up committing suicide. Or their blood pressure goes right off the scale and they literally explode. You know, so they're all life-threatening, but these are the statements he made. And then we went back into the court, and they said that I could appeal it. So I said, you know, what's the point? You know, I already see what you people are doing. You're trying to keep the truth from the public. So I said, I want this to come into the Supreme Court of Nova Scotia. And I asked at that point, because I had no trust in the judge or the prosecutors. You know, as far as I was concerned, they were all a pack of criminals because they already knew the truth. You know, the truth was surrounding them. you know, 48 sworn affidavits now. I mean, where am I going to get that? And, you know, unless it's true to begin with. But, you know, they just wanted to keep a lid on this. So I asked for another judge and other prosecutors. But when I went to court, of course, the same damn judge and the same prosecutors. And, but I did get a jury, and I thought maybe then I'd have a chance. But they presented their case. They had six or seven Mounties that had raided my property. They testified. But, they, you know, they were telling about their brave exploits in my backyard. And, you know, it was so stupid, you know, because when as soon as the cross-examination came, I would hold up a copy of the Spring Hill Record, you know, full-page article with me, picture of me and everything. I said, you know, would a criminal go to a local newspaper and have a full-page article detailing his activities? You know, like a year before I was ever charged? And, of course, every RCMP officer had to say, well, no, a criminal wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And then I asked them about the videotape footage I had taken into them as evidence. Because I'd gone to them and I asked them, I told them, I said, there's politicians here that need to be charged with criminal negligence causing death. Because they're not doing anything to represent the people. And I also asked them when I went in if I could be supplied with whatever they confiscated so I could make more medicine. And I told them right then I was going to grow it in my backyard. I never hid a thing. But 3 months later, they came and raided me. You know, and it was just pathetic what went on. But throughout the court case, I seen, you know, just how evil and you know, it just made my skin crawl to even be in the same room with these people. Because, like I said, they knew the truth. And now I went through this whole damn thing. You know, in the end, I was the only one that was allowed to testify, you know, on my own behalf. They wouldn't let me. I had 10 patients ready to testify, 6 doctors. They wouldn't let any of them on the stand. They wouldn't let me present the scientific evidence, you know, and I destroyed their stupid marijuana. The RCMP had a marijuana expert there, so it was really fun destroying him. But, you know, like, so I testified on my own behalf, and everybody thought that I had won the case hands down because some of the people that sat on that jury, I had treated family members for nothing.
Wow.
And healed them, you know, so I thought, you know, this is done. But then we turned around, and when we come out, when we finished up, we were told we could leave. And 3 hours later, they called us right back to the court. They said the jury had reached a verdict. So I came back, and when I came into the courtroom, I sat down, and the prosecutor, this Monica McQueen from the Justice Department, she was there. But Doug Shatford, the Crown Prosecutor, he wasn't. So we sat for a few minutes, and then in comes Shatford, and he sat down, and a minute or two later, in come the jury. And when I stood up, you know, like it was guilty, guilty, guilty. And I looked at this, you know, guilty of what? You know, healing people? Is that a crime? You know, I couldn't believe it. And then I turned to the judge right then, and I told the judge point blank, I said, man, I said, you better lock me up right now, because I said, the minute I leave this court, I'm going right back to treating people until I'm sentenced. But judge never said a word. And then the next day, I got a call from one of the people who had been in the audience that day. And she had seen the Crown Prosecutor leaving the jury room just a minute before they come in. That's where he was. He was in the jury room. That's jury tampering. And she went back to the courthouse. She checked out, you know, the whole thing. Because I told her, I said, go back and make sure. You know, this is a serious charge. We went back. She made sure. And we let the judge know. 2 weeks later, they called us to Amherst. The two prosecutors are sitting there, and there's a lawyer representing them, and the judge is sitting on the stand, same judge. And when we walk in, the woman had seen it all. The first thing they did, they threatened her. They said, you know, if we find anything you say here to be untrue, you could be facing 14 years in prison. But this woman is a rock. I mean, she just looked at him. She said, look, I'm here to tell the truth. So she got up there, and she told the truth. She told them what she had witnessed. They couldn't disprove it. They tried to do all kinds of things. You know, they said all kinds of like things to her, like, you know, you're just doing this because if Mr. Simpson goes to jail, you'll lose your supplier. And she just laughed in their face. She told them, she said, do you think Rick Simpson is the only person in Canada that grows cannabis? You know, she said, I can find cannabis anywhere. You know, so this has nothing to do with any of this. She just made a fool of them. So they finally let her down off the stand. You know, they couldn't disprove a word she said. And then it was my turn, so I called the Crown Prosecutor, this Doug Shatford, and I put him on the stand. And because a couple of the local growers, see, I got to know all the people that were supplying and growing and things. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the local suppliers had told me they had sold cannabis to Doug Shatford. So I said to Shatford, I said, could you tell us about your use of cannabis, sir? And all Jesus, I mean, all red in the face, and he started sputtering and spitting. And then the judge stepped right in on, you know, oh, that line of questioning will not be tolerated. And I said, well, their lawyer asked Mrs. Dwyer about her use of it. Now, why can't I ask him? The whole thing was just all, it was all rigged. And then they had a couple of flunkies that worked in the courthouse come in and say that Shatford wasn't in the jury room. Of course, they would have lost their jobs if they had said otherwise. But he got caught again a couple of years later. Same thing. Another oil case. A guy from Amherst. They caught him jury tampering. They caught the police lying. They just, instead of, Shatford should have been disbarred immediately. This man has been doing this for years and getting away with it. And, but he's still out there. He's still the Crown prosecutor. They just dismissed the case and swept it under the rug. You know, what goes on in Canada, I mean, can hardly be called justice. The whole thing, they're in league with the government. You see, the government's controlling the medical system, the legal system, all of it. And what they have a bunch of psychopaths. You know, like I said, when you look at these doctors, you know, especially oncologists. Oncologists are psychopaths. You have to be a psychopath because it's actually a known fact that about 90% of oncologists won't even take their own treatments if they had cancer. But baby, they'll give them to you or me. You know, so it's all about the money. They don't care that they're killing us. I mean, where's their average? Where's their batting average? How many people are they saving? You know, you think after a decade or two that they catch on that, you know, radiation and poison is bad for you. You know, a 10-year-old kid would know that. But not our esteemed cancer doctors. They can't figure it out. Pretty damn sad, brother.
It is. It is, Rick. At the time of your trial and to now, what have you learned about the Constitution? And I don't mean that as a document, but the actual construction of our governments. And United States and Canada are, quite frankly, they're just twin halves of a hemisphere to me, of this continent. The governmental forms and functions are pretty much identical, and we've discovered over the years that, in fact, Canada is just part of the Federal Reserve System as well, which is basically the real-world government. But in terms of how law, real law, operates, and statutory law under color of law, as it's conducted in the United States and Canada now, have you learned more about that over the years since your trial?
Well, the main thing I've learned basically in North America, if you're looking for justice, you're not going to find it, because if you want justice, you have to have a common law court to begin with.
Right.
Now show me a common law court.
Right.
But the irony I find here is when you look back at Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln. Today, they would call these people potheads. You know, the founding fathers, people that sat down and wrote the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and all the rest of it. You know, I mean, when you read these documents, these people were real thinkers. And if the United States of America had stuck with their own Constitution, instead of seeing it shredded the way it has been, I mean, America would be a much better place today. I think it's horrendous what's happening, and the same thing in Canada, you know, with what we have today is Stephen Harper. Well, it doesn't make any difference what party's in. They're all bought and paid for. Huh. None of them are working for the public. They're all working for the big money that's been controlling them forever. But yet the public keeps going in and going to these elections, and on top of that, we all know the elections are fixed anyway.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, so it's the whole thing is just a bad joke on the public. But, you know, I really think it's time that we all stopped and woke up. And, you know, I mean, we all have to survive on this planet. And when I look at the rate that they're toxifying this earth now, I think if they keep it up, within 10 years, we could all wind up going extinct, because our immune systems are already badly compromised from all the toxins in the environment. It's getting worse every day. It's time for the human race to unite. It's time for us to save ourselves. You know, take the money and power away from the big money. Let's get down to brass tacks here. We do need a new world government, not the new world order bullshit. Right. We need a world government that's distributing the resources and money properly to every country to make things better for everyone. Everything done with an open book policy. Nothing hidden anymore. And let's get rid of all these damn industries that are causing so much pollution. Let's switch them over to cannabis-based industries. You know, hemp-based industries are earth-friendly. You know, we can still all have our jobs. As a matter of fact, we'll have more jobs. You know, if we use cannabis properly, I think we could put an end to unemployment, too. So it's the ultimate answer to all our problems. The biggest problem we have is our own ignorance. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And our own apathy.
Contrast what you just said with some of what you're seeing in Europe right now, because I know you've talked about the fact that you have more freedom over there to operate, to basically get your message out to people. It seems like, at least over there, there is now a tolerance for your message and for a message of freedom as well that's not found here in the North American continent.
Well, that's quite true. I mean, the history of this plant goes so far back here in Europe. You know, I mean, in the Czech Republic, they say that the use of hemp goes back at least 26,000 years. So, you know, they've been around this stuff for a while. And actually, right here in the Balkans, up until 1958, the Balkans was the biggest, third biggest hemp producer in the world. But the big money kind of did some deals there, and they got them out of the hemp industry. You know, but I found people over here to be much more open-minded. You know, you see people over here growing gardens and things. Like back home, it's hard to find anybody that even grows a garden anymore. You know, they're more grounded, you know, to Mother Nature and, you know, and living off the land. And I find the people here to be much more self-sufficient. I really love Europe. I think that they're very much more advanced than we are in North America. But and I think if hard times do come, that they probably will suffer less here. Because, I mean, over in Canada and the U.S., if the grocery stores close, well, I think people would just start eating each other. You know, it's pretty grim.
Yeah, it is.
But I do see things like opening up here, you know, in these countries, like I said, here in the Balkans, where they let me on national television and things. And you know, I had an experience here recently in the hospital. Many years ago, I'd had a vasectomy, so I couldn't have any more children. And everything was fine. And then around 2005, I sat down one day a little too quickly, and all of a sudden, something started swelling. So I was taking the oil at the time, so I never really worried about it. But the problem was, at the time in Canada, I mean, the doctors hated me. They knew who I was and what I was doing, and boy, they stood against me. So I didn't dare go to the doctors. So I just let this thing as it was, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. Well, finally, by about 2009, it was about the size of a damn softball. And I went on, did the Czech tour and everything with this thing. And I used to get quite self-conscious about it, you know, because there was this big bulge sticking out. But, I mean, I just had to do it because there's nothing really I could do. So, anyway, I spent that time in Europe, but I never had the money to get anything done about it. But this time when I came back to Europe, some supporters in Croatia, one of them was a nurse. So she arranged for me to see a doctor. So I go in and I see this urologist, and he checks me over, and he looks, and as soon as he sees the swelling, he went, "You have any fevers?" And I said, "No." And he said, "That's strange." He said, "Often with cancer, there's fevers." And I just started laughing at him, and I said, "Don't think you're going to find any cancer there." And he gave me this strange look. And then when he did the ultrasound, he looked at me and he said, "You're right." He says, "It's just fluid. It's simple operation." So I said, "Good." So a month later, I go back to the hospital, and I get in the hospital. And when they put me in this room with two beds, like there was another patient in there. So I just walked in, got on the bed. And as soon as I did, the head doctor of the hospital walked in. And he picks up my chart, and he reads it. Like, he said, "Ricky Logan Simpson." And he looked at me and he said, "Are you the Rick Simpson?" And I said, "Well, okay." I said, "Yep, that would be me." And he said, "I have some people who want to talk to you." And then right in the room filled full of doctors. And I said, "Oh, boy, this is going to be good," because I was ready to tell them all off anyway. I mean, I'm not shy about it. But they started asking me all these questions about the oil and about their own medical problems. And the patient in the next bed, it was so funny because he was looking at me, and he was looking at the doctors and back and forth. And then finally he said to one of the doctors, he said, "What's going on here?" And when the doctors turned to him, he said, "You don't know who you're in the same room with." But no, I found the doctors. See, this was a surgical hospital. They were 100% behind the oil. They did the operation, 4-day stay in the hospital, operation and everything. 3,700 kuna. That equals about $600. Where can you get that done in North America?
I can tell you from very hard experience last year, I was in the hospital for 2 days, and then I had to go back in for 2 days because of a complication of the meds that they gave me, which were basically designed to knock out an infection. And cost of that was $30,000, of which I'm still expected to pay $6,000 out of pocket, even though I had a $1,500 deductible on my insurance because of the paper rigging that these people do.
Oh, yeah.
It is, in America now, it is the purview of a rich man to have medical attention. That's what I've discovered. Or, on the other side of it, if you're on public assistance, for the working person, it's almost not even possible anymore. We can't afford the insurance rates that go with it.
Well, even if you couldn't afford the insurance, what good is medicine when it's not medicine? This stuff they're giving us doesn't heal anyone, for God's sakes.
No,
so the whole thing is nothing but a fraud.
No, I started out with orthopedic surgery, wound up with an infection, wound up from there going into systemic shutdown as a result of antibiotics that they gave me. And twice they gave these antibiotics to me that shut down my system, despite the fact that they knew I was highly allergic to almost all medical antibiotics. It's a prescribed course. And I kind of kicked myself for going through that. But the odd thing is that once I was out of the hospital, once I started to kick this thing, I had a lot of pain. And they gave me oxycodone and Vicodin to take. I smoked weed. And quite frankly, you know, I don't think a year ago I would have admitted this with my face in a camera, but I think it's time that I stepped up too. So I finally decided, and I've told people this, this was my pursuit. Thanks to some friends of mine who told me, you've got to go into the shamanic if you're going to deal with this, and you should deal with it herbally. And that was their code for telling me it's time to deal with the pain in a holistic fashion. And I'm here to tell you that the cannabis did it. It gave me pain relief. It helped me sleep. And I wasn't walking around tripping on synthetic codeine.
Yes. The only thing that scares me with the use of cannabis is actually the strong sativa strains. You know, I always tell people, if you're going to make the medicine, make it from indica, the heavy sedative indica strains that make you sleep. But some of these sativa strains are very, very strong, and they're so energizing, they're scary. Now, if someone who had a heart condition were to take a sativa, that it could end their life, I think. And, there's things like this that I have concerns about. You know, but overall, if the medicine is made properly with the right strains, it's the safest medicine.
We're experiencing some Skype problems.
Medicine on Earth, and there's just nothing that works like this.
We're okay. Just go ahead and keep going. Yeah, the video is freezing up a little bit.
You want to hang up?
Yeah, let's try. We'll just break it here.
Okay, let's hang up and call back.
Okay. And so we picked the Skype conference back up at this point. We had nasty interference. Given that... where you are in Europe right now, I think it's rather amazing that we're conducting a video call like this, Rick. And I was losing lighting in here because I'm using natural light, and the sky clouded up and rained over us, and I lost my lighting. So viewers will forgive us. We're not on Fox or CNBC or the CBC, so we don't have high budgets and big lighting sets. We're just two guys that are having a conversation. And my conversation is with Rick Simpson. And at this point, I'd like to kind of hit on something here, Rick, that has been going on for a while now. Anybody that does a web search now knows that your name is highly tied to the oil. There are people out there, as the medical industry, as the medical marijuana industry is picking up, there are people out there who clearly have a profit motive now in selling different medicinal things and attaching your name to it. Address that a little bit, please.
I'm not affiliated with anybody that's supplying the oil or any of these people. They're really all frauds. If they're using my name, they've never asked for my permission or anything. But the problem is there's so many of them now. You know, you go after one and 20 more pop up. So I just gave up. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I made it very well known on the website and everything that I have no connection to these people. And it really, for the most part, it disgusts me what they're doing. But at the same time, there are some people out there that are actually trying to, you know, supply high-grade oils, and they are really healing people because the high-grade oils really do work. But there's so many out there, they're supplying low-grade trash, and they're saying, you know, it's the Rick Simpson oil. Some are even claiming that I'm directly affiliated with their operations, which is a pack of nonsense. You know, so it's truly disgusting, and that's the reason I've always told people it's best at present to go out and get a pound yourself and make your own oil. That's the only way you know that you have the real thing.
And I know, too, that the profit motive wasn't part of what you did in the beginning. And, in fact, your message is very populist. You've said repeatedly this is for the people. No one should control it. No one should right. own it. No one should patent it or copyright right. it or do any of the other things. The philosophy that you expound upon a lot of times, to me, is probably one of the most humane approaches to healing, because you're not putting yourself out there as some sort of apostle. You're not putting yourself out there as a guy who originated something. Really, you've been the voice for the people in terms of getting this out. Is that correct?
Well, basically, yes. I mean, I've never claimed that I found the cure for cancer. I think there's been many cures found.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the only thing that I could actually say that I did was I maybe was the first person to actually use the oil properly and then report my findings openly to the public. You know, because, like I said, the government wouldn't listen and the United Nations wouldn't listen, so I took my case to the people. And I think at the beginning, I don't think the government took me seriously, because I was way down on the east coast of Canada. You know, all the action when it came to cannabis was going on in BC.
Right.
So to them, I think I was just a voice in the wilderness, and I think that they thought that they could scare me away. Well, that didn't work out too well for them. So I have no regrets. I mean, I have three children. I have three grandchildren. And I realized that, you know, if we didn't have this medicine, they have no future. None of our children have a future. I mean, we need something that actually heals us, you know, and when you look at, you know, what they do to us, you know, like they're robbing us from every direction. You know, when you look at all these rich families today, like Rockefellers, Rothschilds, I mean, for the last 200 years, the Rothschilds have been involved in every major conflict, every major war. They funded both sides of these wars. They made money off it. You know, they're warmongers, for God's sakes. They committed untold crimes against us for decades, and all these rich families have done the same. But, you know, if I go rob a bank, am I allowed to keep the proceeds? I mean, what these people have, all their possessions, their resource, they're all proceeds of crimes that they committed against us. Now, I'm not saying to put them in jail or strangle them or hang them or anything, but, you know, give them enough money to live out their lives, but let's put these resources, you know, in the hands of the right people, and let's stop looking at cannabis as being the scapegoat. You know, let's tax cannabis to death. Let's make the medicinal users pay. You know, all of this corporate nonsense has to come to an end, because I honestly think today in this world, our biggest enemy is corruption. And corruption is a crime against us all, but yet we all passively sit there while we know it goes on. So I think it's just about time we get off our asses and put an end to it.
Boy, that's a resounding cry that I hope a lot of people pick up on. just had a memory lapse there. Talk a little bit about, I know you have a book that you published, and I'm not quite clear on when you released that book, but I know you had it coming out, I think, in 2011. So you've got a book on the market that is out there. Other projects you've been involved in, and also, you know, how are you financing your operations to do what you're doing today, Rick?
Well, basically through book sales right now.
Okay, good.
We brought out the ebook, Phoenix Tears, The Rick Simpson Story, in 2012. And it's done very well. Actually, it's, you know, it's kept me going and it's kept me in funds. And actually, we should be going into print with it, I think, this week. It'll be finally going into print.
Excellent.
We have the second book, Phoenix Tears, Rick Simpson Oil, Nature's Answer for Cancer. And that's done very well, too. And now Yindrich Bear, he had just released a book, too, Rick Simpson Protocols. And it's also doing very well. So we're hoping, and there'll be a fourth book coming out within the next 2 to 3 weeks. So we're hoping to have them all into print probably within the next month. But they'll all be available as ebooks on our website. They're available on Amazon too. But I think anybody that sits down and reads these books, it's almost hard to believe. You know, when you read like my story, you know, I never could have conceived that mankind could be so evil. You know, I thought, you know, that's the reason I almost didn't use the oil, because I thought, you know, if THC actually cured cancer, well, the medical system would be using it. You know, like, we trust these people.
Yeah.
My God. You know, and it's all, when I look at all the researchers, you know, like the Medical School of Virginia study, I heard that on our local radio station, a little AM station that didn't have a broadcast width of 50 miles. Now, that was broadcast all over the United States of America. You know, all of these researchers that were involved with cannabis research at the time, they all knew about this. Why did they keep their mouths shut? Why is it left to somebody like me to be the one to bring this forward when all of these researchers knew the truth for decades and did nothing? There's something wrong with this picture, brother. You know, I think a lot of people got bought off. I think they were just, you know, okay, you're a researcher. Well, here's a research grant. Keep your mouth shut. I firmly believe that's exactly what's been going on here, because it shouldn't be me. It should have been one of these PhDs or these chemists or somebody that really is an expert. I became an expert the hard way. So I'm very disappointed. You know, I used to have trust in education one time, but the way I look at education, I mean, you can have a IQ of 200, but if you got no logic and you got no common sense, then you're as dumb as a post.
Yeah, the revolution's going to come from the people, and it's going to be grassroots, literally grassroots, now that I think about the pun on that. But you look at the culture that we have right now. The United States, and I know this movement's also in Canada, I haven't kept up with it, state by state, we're starting to see initiatives, propositions like you had in California, Colorado, Washington. We have some forms of it in at least a half dozen other states in this country as well. But my question in all of these propositions and all of these so-called enactments is, why in the hell are we going to the government and asking them for permission in the first place? It seems to me, Rick, like we've got everything backwards. We keep asking for permission to not be controlled anymore.
Right. It's insane. It was, like Jack Hare and I one night, you know, Jack was firmly against the initiatives for California. You know, I mean, Jack and I became good friends, and I have nothing but respect for Jack Hare. He was an amazing man. But and then Jack, he told me his initiatives. You know, Jack had a whole list of it. And I listened to this for about a half an hour, and then finally he said to me, he said, well, what do you think of all this, Rick? I said, Jack, if it was me, I said, I'd take all the initiatives and just throw them in a trash can. And he said, well, what does that mean? I said, Jack, I said, you and I both know any law, act, statute, anything that was ever, any restriction that was ever put in place against this plant, they were all put in place for the use of corruption. I said, there's never been any real law that was ever put in place against this plant. And these damn lawyers know it. I mean, you look at this organization, Normal, mostly run by lawyers. Mm-hmm. Now, for over 40 years, these legal eagles have been running around trying to get rid of a law that, in truth, does not even exist. Because in a democracy, you cannot have laws based on corruption.
That's perfectly true. In fact, the original act, if I recall correctly, was some in the United States, was a tax act. And basically, they realized you can't tax something that's a weed, which grows in the wild, and which you can grow in your backyard, or now even grow them in your closet, thanks to the miracle of grow light systems and hydroponics. But what we have in the process now is this whole medical marijuana market that's grown up, and I've seen it. I've been to California twice since the propositions went through, and I've seen what it's like. What they've smelled, again, is a shitload of money that they want to tap into. Governors in the eastern states here in my state, which is very conservative, are even now gone, after stating that they would categorically never legalize use of cannabis, have gone, you know, this looked kind of interesting to us, because all of a sudden they realize there's billions of dollars of tax revenue in all of it. The same.
You know, I mean, they haven't stolen enough already. They want more.
Right. It's the same toxic bullshit that got us here in the first place. And now we're going back to our masters and we're asking them for permission to give them more money for something that was given to us by Creator as part of our organic beingness. It's ludicrous. It's insane.
Well, it's excuses they use. I mean, I had an interview here in Slovenia with me 2 or 3 months ago. And he came up to me and he said, well, you know, he said, we have agreements with the United Nations and the European Union, and, you know, these agreements have to be met. And I'm standing there looking at him, and I said, look, I said, would I be wrong in saying that the responsibility of any government, the first responsibility would have to be the health and welfare of their people? And he just looked at me. I said, what you're talking about is paper and ink, a bunch of corruption that mankind put in use. I said, it's nonsense. Any government, that should be their first mission, to take care of their own damn people. And as far as I'm concerned, every government should have their own government farm run by the government for the people, supply the medicine at a very, very cheap cost or even on a donation basis. That's the best thing governments could do for their people. If they want to give them a medical system that works, give them cannabis. That's all they need to do.
Truth of the matter is, Rick, they're taking care of their own because it is a government of the elite, by the elite, and for the elite, and we've simply been made property, much like, to be very crude about it, chattel, livestock, to be managed, to be herded, to be called off when it's not convenient to maintain the herd anymore, and that's what we have right now.
Well, they're so brainwashed. I was talking to a politician here just recently. He's got quite a bit of drag here in the EU, and he told me, he said, you know, Rick, he said, you can't expect to win against the bear. And I'm looking at him, and I said, I can't expect to win. I said, you know, I said, there's millions of people now worldwide have used this medicine. You know, the cat's out of the bag. There's no holding this back. Oh, he said, no, but with their money and power and all of this, you know, and I said, so you're saying that this will be an ongoing battle for decades to come? And he said, well, yes. He said, you know, they have all these resources. And I said, well, you know, I said, if that's what it's going to be, that's what it's going to be. And then about 2 minutes later, he's sitting there and he looked at me and he said, well, you know, Rick, he said, my mother was just diagnosed with Parkinson's. And she's been, the doctors think she might also have Alzheimer's. And I looked at him and I said, and what works on Parkinson's and Alzheimer's? Could it be the oil? And I said, and now guess what? Now, if you want to treat your mother effectively, guess who's going to have to become a criminal? And he just looked at me. Now, this can't go on. I think within 2 years or less, every state in the union is going to be legal. We see all of these countries now, like China, Romania, they're all over the place. They're legalizing the medicinal use of cannabis. And it's not because they want to see pot smoked. It's all to do with this oil. And where my name is connected to it, so, I mean, like CNN and all these big news outfits, they've known about me since 2004. They've all known about me.
Yeah.
But they won't go there because they're all controlled by the same people that are running. I mean, the same people who own the oil companies, the pharmaceutical companies. Well, they got their buddies or they own the
media. At the advertising. I don't watch much TV, but occasionally I subject myself to it because there's something I want to see. Every other commercial in the United States is a pharmaceutical commercial, and 3/4 of that commercial is contraindications of all the toxicity and side effects of the drugs. These people are spending millions of dollars every day to tell you their drugs are poison and why you should take them.
Right.
Are we insane? Are we really this insane? And after a while, you go, you know what? This is Stockholm Syndrome on steroids. But basically, it's time that people wake up. I view cannabis right now, Rick, as a currency, as a liberating currency for the people if they pick it up. We don't need permission. We can grow it ourselves. We can do it in small lots inside of our homes if we need to, without anybody's permission to do so.
And well, we should have a cannabis-based economy.
That's what we should have.
Worldwide.
Yes.
You know, because then we can learn to live as one with this damn planet. That's the problem. They always say, you know, we're overpopulated. That's nonsense.
No.
This planet could sustain twice the population it has right now very easily.
You've flown in airplanes.
Just managed properly.
You've flown in airplanes over continents before. You and I both know about what they call flyover land. And when you fly over the middle of the United States, for thousands of miles and see the open spaces. When you fly over the continent of Europe and you see the land there, over Africa or Asia, you know this planet's not overpopulated. What they've done is condense the populations into manageable areas called cities and communities, and then they've given us the myth that somehow we're too numerous, when in fact they just suck at managing.
Well, you got that right, but it's just the other things too, like today with chemtrails. I see the United Nations now, they finally admit it. Yes, they have been spraying over populated centers, you know, for the last, in Zagreb, for the last 14 years, they've been spraying over Zagreb, you know, but this is being done by private individuals and companies. You know, like, I mean, why, if I went up and I started spraying a mist over your city or over your town, somebody would shoot me down. So how come these guys are getting away with it? You know, and there are just so damn many things that are happening in our, you know, in our, to our earth these days, and, you know, with HAARP and all the rest of the other stuff. I mean, they go into this stuff and they say it's conspiracies. Well, you know, I mean, when I look at what the medical system has done, and that's all connected to the big money, as far as I'm concerned, it is all one big conspiracy. It is all connected. And I mean, I learned about it in 2003 when I shut off my damn television. And I started watching documentaries, because by that time I already knew enough about the medicine. And then when I connected it to everything else, you know, that I was finding out through the documentaries, it all fit together, just like connect the dots.
Exactly.
You know, and there's the whole ugly picture. But there's so many people, they can't stand the truth. I've seen people come to my house when I was in Canada, sit there at my kitchen table. And after about 2 hours, you know, I would have pounded into their heads, you know, what was going on here. And then they start making excuses for the government. You know, like I don't know how many people have said, well, you know, they've got to control the population. And I look at them and I say, do you know where you're living? This is Canada. There's nobody here. Why would we need to control the population?
That's true. You know, like,
but they panic because they don't know. They know the government's killing them, but they're always looking for an excuse to make it, you know, so it's okay. You know, it's not okay. It is time we had a government that actually represented us.
Well, it's time we had a government.
The only way we're going to have that.
We don't have government.
We need independence. No, we don't.
We have corporations. Unfortunately,
right.
Every nation on this earth has been co-opted by what we would call the cabal. I don't care what you call them anymore, because they're illegitimate bastards. But The point is, we don't have governments. We have corporations. And the corporate structure is the toxin of this planet. Them and their money system and their pharma systems and their media systems. These people claim they can see a dime from your driveway by a satellite, and yet, what, they couldn't find a plane in Southeast Asia, right? So, what are they? Are they omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent, or are they just men who were clever enough to do the Wizard of Oz in mass scale on all of us?
I think it was more the Wizard of Oz thing, because I know, you know, a lot of people in the beginning, and you know, this is how depressing it really was for me, because
it is depressing.
Patients would come to me and they'd say, you know, one of these days they're going to come kill you, or you know, or they're going to come charge you for practicing medicine without a license and all this nonsense, you know. And but the strange part is, you know, like I've been doing this, you know, for 11 and a half years now, nobody has ever even threatened me.
No.
They don't come near me. This I can't explain. I mean, if they had to come and put a bullet in my head back in 2005, they could have put an end to this very quickly. Nothing would have happened. But today, where I've become so well-known and this cause has become so well-known, I think I'm probably safer now than I've ever been.
Of course you are.
And it wouldn't do it. I'd be a martyr. I mean, if they killed me now, what good would it do them? And,
well,
you know, and basically, we got tens of thousands of people worldwide doing the same now. So who are you going to kill?
That's exactly what's happening. And, you know, that's what people have to do. Look, somebody said to me one time, the stuff you say on your radio show, they should put you in jail for that, or somebody's going to come and kill you. I'm like, I'm safer in plain view than I'm ever going to be cringing in my bedroom somewhere, being afraid and wetting my pants over these people. I'd sooner go down with a bullet in my head than be on my knees worshiping the slave masters. My children are not going to have a better world as a result of my silence. And that's part of the thing that I love about people like you, Rick, is that you put your ass on the line to make a difference for people that are going to come up through this world in future generations.
Well, you know, when I look at it, I think when I leave this life that I'm not going to have too much to hang my head about, but
no.
When I look at all these people in all these different professions that have really, they're guilty of complicity in genocide is what they're guilty of. You know, how are they going to live with themselves? You know, when the full realization of what they're part of, you know, I'm a cop, I'm going and stealing your medicinal cannabis. Am I a good guy or a bad guy? You know, I'm the judge that's sending you to jail because you have a medicinal need, but I'm going to put you in jail so you can't get that, fill that medicinal need. You know, and the politicians, you know, all of them. And then the evil people that are behind this in the boardrooms. You know, I mean, they know the damage they're doing to this planet. They know the damage they're doing to all living creatures. But what are they doing to rectify it? I mean, they have the money, they have the resources, they have the power. But they won't put it in the right places. So I think I do think we need governments or regional representatives.
We do.
But we need people who are independent. No parties. An independent person will work for his constituents. But if he's a party member, he's going to work for the party.
We need tribal elders again. We need to go back to the first principles of the original people that were on our continent, North America, and all over the world with the so-called indigenous peoples. We need to go back to first basics of governing ourselves according to very simple laws. Do no harm, do good. We need to
common laws.
To return back to nature. It's so simple.
It's also simple. That's part of the problem with the human race. We tend to complicate everything to death, you know. We create new trades and jobs that shouldn't even exist, for God's sakes. You know, there's so many people today, they don't want to get their hands dirty, you know, but honestly, I think that farming is probably the most honorable profession on earth.
It is.
You know, and, you know, if you're not living on the land, then you're not in touch with nature. You've lost touch with nature, and that's not what a human should be doing. You know, these cities you see today, you know, they always say the same thing, you know, oh, come to the city, you know, work in our factory, you know, raise your family here in this wonderful environment. Well, you spend 25 years working in the stupid factory. Your children are running street gangs or they're taking drugs. You have no control over nothing, you know, and then you're tied into that lifestyle because you've lost touch with the land. So I would like to see a real huge back to the land movement, you know, get people back where they belong and let's start working together and getting along, you know, and I've always been against borders, too. I mean, all these damn invisible lines that separate us. You know, if there was no borders, we would learn, you know, to get along better. But all borders do, they promote hate. You know, one side is this religion, the other side is that religion. Well, here's a gun, go kill them. You know, I don't think there's been anything in throughout history that's killed more people than religion. You know,
exactly, yeah.
Love
exactly.
Thy neighbor, shoot him first.
Yeah, the whole geopolitics thing is still a religion at the end of the day when you look at it close enough. And our differences as people are actually our strength. I mean, I love people of different cultures, people who are the Native American people in North America, the indigenous people around the world are all very important. And we can honor traditions of each other and not lose that while at the same time not having this geopolitical boundary system that keeps us separated.
Right. Well, I think as a human being, I think if you want to go live in Alaska or if you want to go live in Siberia, it's up to you. You know, I don't think there should be any restrictions. It's just so crazy. You know, like we talk about freedom and democracy, and most people don't even understand the concept of freedom. You know, being told you're free doesn't mean it's so.
Right.
And, you know, what I've seen in Canada and North America particularly, you're free to do what you're told. That's what you're free to do.
Well, I think you go a long way towards advancing some things that are fundamentally human that get us back to this organic roots that we so desperately need, Rick, and I want to express my appreciation for the work that you've done for actually getting out there and doing something and putting yourself on the line for it and for the work that you've done. What's in the future? What have you got coming up?
Well, I mean, we've got a lot of government, a lot of the attention over here now. You know, the governments are finally paying attention to us. So I'm thinking something might happen here in the Balkans this fall. It's looking very promising. I'm still looking at South America, you know, and areas like that, because there are doors opening now, starting to open everywhere. And I just want to get on with the simple research. You know, like at present, it's a real madhouse out there with all these different strains. Nobody knows what to buy, what to get. There's no real stability. Yeah. You know, because I'm always having people contact me and say, you know, what strain should I get? And I can't tell them because, I mean, I used to use a strain in Canada called White Widow. And it was very sedative. It was the most wonderful painkiller I ever seen. This stuff, you were bulletproof when you're on this oil. But when I came to Europe, White Widow over here was more sativa, more energizing. Mm-hmm. So I explained to people, like, you know, if you send to five different seed companies, and most all of them sell White Widow, if you order the White Widow strain from five different seed companies and then you planted them, you would probably be growing five different varieties of cannabis, different medicinal varieties. You know, so there's a real problem there right now. We've got to get this stabilized, and I'm thinking maybe about a seed farm or becoming affiliated with one of the big seed companies so we could get this perfected, you know, so simplify it for people.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. The one thing that I see as a danger right now as we see this medical industry heat up is the danger that Monsanto is going to step in and begin to try hybridizing the seeds. Is that a danger as you see it as well?
Well, I've already heard that Monsanto is already in this game. But as far as I'm concerned, we should just go burn Monsanto down. I don't think Monsanto is going to have their way with this because there's so many small-time breeders. I mean, at one point, I used to have about 40 different strains of my own. So there's lots of people out there with real seeds. So I don't think Monsanto does pose that big a threat if the public stands up to them and says we've had enough of this nonsense. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always said that in the end, this plant is going to come back and it's going to stomp out all the corruption that ever stood in its path. Because the bottom line is there's only one truth, you know, and this is what I'm telling the public about this. And, you know, they're so shocked. You know, I laughed. There was a lady interviewed me here in Zagreb here a while ago, and she said, well, I don't really believe this. You'll have to prove it to me. And I looked at her and I said, dear, I said, I put on two seminars down in Opatija. I said, I put on a big seminar here, right here at the university in Zagreb. Now, I said, do you think if I wasn't telling the truth that those doctors wouldn't have got up and exposed me? And if that's the case, well, why didn't they? You know, you can't expose somebody for telling the truth. And no doctor will get on the stage to take me on because the simple truth is I can expose a doctor in 30 seconds. It's a simple fact. You just look at them and say, okay, why aren't you following your Hippocratic Oath? That's the basis of medicine, a Hippocratic Oath. You're not following it. Now tell me why. Because that is, that is your responsibility. But see, that's what scares these doctors. They don't have a leg to stand on. But everything I'm saying has been scientifically proven. It is the truth, whether they like it or not. And this is going to change the face of medicine forever. And I'm hoping it's going to give us all a much better life.
I think those are perfect words to end the interview with. One more time, give out your website and anything that you want the people to have as a takeaway for this. We'll also post up links with the show when it goes out.
Okay, brother. Yeah, and I appreciate a link, too. That'd be great. Well, my website is phoenixtears.ca. And if you go to phoenixtears.ca, you'll find all the information you need to manufacture your own medicine. You know, it tells you the strains that are the type to look for. It tells you the dosage instructions. It's all right there on our website. It's been there since 2004. So I encourage everyone, please go there. And, you know, like basically when you get into this oil, you become your own doctor. And when you see the healing power it has, you know, it's a God-given plant. We all have the right to use this plant. No one has the right to control it. It's harmless, it's non-addictive, it's a medicine you can use under basically any circumstance, and it's going to do nothing but good for you. So, you know, all of my main message to America is, I mean, I always looked at the United States as being the greatest country in the world, and up until a few decades ago, it was. So I would like to see America go back to what it should be. You know, stand up for yourselves, take back your country, you know, make the United States, that name, make it mean something again.
And we'll hope that people will do that. It's time for you out there to step up one by one and lay the foundations for a better world, beginning with re-embracing nature and nature's healings. My guest today is Rick Simpson, And I think this has been a very encompassing conversation, and I cannot thank you enough for coming on, Rick.
It was a pleasure, brother, and I'd be happy to come back anytime.
You are more than welcome. This is Off Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins. The truth is out there. It's inside you. Start digging for it. We'll be back with another show very soon.
You are listening to Off Planet Radio at offplanetradio.net and offplanetradio.com.